Is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. 11 girls have not been seen since their Christian camp was slammed with a wall of water in Kirk County, Texas. The confirmed death toll in that county alone is 59.
Our goal is to rescue those in peril and find those who are lost.
That goal of Kerrville Mayor Joe Herring won't be easy. It's raining again. Up to 10 more inches could fall today in parts of Texas, where the death toll is up to 70. President Trump has declared a major disaster, freeing up federal resources. The Coast Guard is flying planes with thermal imaging, trying to find anybody who might still be alive. The National Weather Service in Raleigh has just issued a flash flood warning for central North Carolina, getting inundated from what was a tropical storm. As Israel attacks today killed 38 in Gaza, Benjamin Netanyahu is on his way to the U.S., to meet with President Trump tomorrow, saying that Israel has never had a better friend in the White House. This is ABC News. Israel is sending a ceasefire negotiating team to Qatar, but at the same time carrying out more airstrikes in Gaza. Local hospitals reporting at least 38 dead today. The British military says a ship in the Red Sea was set on fire by a series of attacks. No one's claimed responsibility. It's taking on water, and the crew is preparing to abandon. Last stop on the crazy train.
A music icon brought down the curtain on his performing career Saturday.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath played what Osbourne said will be the final live performance of his career in their home city of Birmingham, England. It was not just Black Sabbath who performed the 10-hour show, but other bands like Metallica and Guns N' Roses. Osbourne is 76 and suffers from Parkinson's. Brian Clark, ABC News.
The owners of a pet lion that escaped from a Pakistan farmhouse and injured a woman and her children have now been arrested. Wayne Cabot, ABC News.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Barr. If you're spending more time outside this holiday weekend, experts are warning about a new breed of tick and the bizarre allergy it can spread with just one bite. It's known as the Lone Star tick, and the bug is finding its way to Wisconsin from the southeast part of the country. Doctors with Mayo Clinic say they're already starting to see more patients with what's known as alpha-gal syndrome. It's an allergy to red meat after being bit by this type of tick. And these ticks aren't just in the woods.
You go back 30 years ago and you'd think of, a hunter, an avid hiker out in the woods. Now we're starting to see ticks pop up sometimes in backyards in suburban areas and stuff like that. And that's a concern.
PJ Leash is an entomologist at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. And though this new tick is spreading, he still considers Lyme disease from a deer tick the bigger concern. Leash also suggests using insect spray, wearing long sleeves and pants, and always checking for ticks after spending time outside. Are you noticing farmers spending more time outside working in the fields? The weather in some parts of the state is challenging and may not mean all the corn crops are knee-high by the 4th of July. The latest crop report shows farmers across Wisconsin had just 3.5 days with workable conditions during the last week. And did you know our state is ranked second for having the most organic farms in the country? Officials with Naturally Wisconsin and the Food Finance Institute are starting a new program to support those efforts and say there's also growing consumer demand for natural, healthy, and sustainable products. The group's already working with more than 800 food-focused entrepreneurs from all across the state. You can find more news anytime at civicmedia.us. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny skies developing today. Light north winds and highs in the mid-80s. In the overnight, a few clouds around, light winds, morning lows in the lower 60s. Monday, mostly sunny with highs in the lower 80s. Storm chances Monday night and Tuesday. Currently 80 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll review the holiday weekend. Hope yours has been good. Also, Kristen Lyerly, John and Gordy, and Jane Matinere will join us as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome to The Rational Revolution with Mark Becker. Coming up, a best of program featuring Paul Page, an interview that Mark did for Independence Day last year. However, before we get to that rebroadcast, let's get a message from Mark Becker regarding a statement he made last week on the show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right, it's about right versus wrong, and I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Oh my goodness. You're back for another exciting, wonderful, historic episode, I'm going to say on this one, of The Rational Revolution. You know, this show typically talks about news and current events and all these types of things, but occasionally I want to go outside the racing line here, if you will, and that is absolutely a foreshadowing. I'm going to talk to you just a little bit and set this up. I have been a huge fan of auto racing since I've been 7 years old. Cars has been a big part of my youth, and now I run a car dealership, so that's part of that is ingrained in who I am. I do race myself. I compete on the local dirt track circuit in a street stock. Let me tell you what, that's a hell of a time. Growing up, my favorite driver was the Tide car of Ricky Rudd. And that was a blast to watch. But then my eyes were opened and I found a series called Championship Auto Racing Teams, or CART. It was an open wheel series that kind of is like a modern day IndyCar, competed with IndyCar. And my favorite drivers morphed from Ricky Rudd to people like Alex Zanardi, Greg Moore, Juan Montoya, Dario Franchitti. Some of those names you might know. And this series had the best drivers in the world. They raced in iconic tracks like here at Road America, Michigan International Speedway, streets of Long Beach. They even raced at an airport in Cleveland, which was my favorite track, by the way. And the series itself was larger than life. And it was really cool because my brother and I bonded over each one of the races. We lived and died by the results of that week's race. And then we, of course, counted down to the start of the next race. And we hung on every word that came from the microphone of the timeless and legendary broadcaster, Paul Page, who now joins us today on The Rational Revolution. I cannot tell you how honored I am to have you here, Paul. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's great to be here. That was quite an introduction. Those were good days, too, weren't they?
They were. I mean, it was such an incredible time to be a fan of motorsports. And, you know, like what you've done in not only motorsports, but broadcasting in itself is remarkable. You know, you did everything from motorsports to the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, for God's sakes, I found out. But I kind of want to, you know, you are an iconic name in racing.
Well, thank you. Thanks for you to say.
And, you know, you were the voice behind some of the most famous moments in the sport. You know, how did you get involved in broadcasting?
Well, I actually got more involved in racing first. I went to the Indy 500 when I was 15 years old, and I just thought, man, I got to do something that involves this.
Okay.
So cool. And, then when I was away in the Army, I had kind of an interest in broadcasting, and I'd done a little something in high school, but when I was in the Army, I actually went to a school for military broadcasters.
No
when
kidding.
I got sent back to Indianapolis, I got a job, a small job at a small radio station. At the same time, I was working for George Vignotti at his shop. And so I had the best of both worlds going for me. But, of course, the job at Vignotti's was kind of a quid pro quo. You can come to the races as long as you come to the shop and work. but one thing led to another, and I became I was primarily doing radio news, which I really enjoyed, at a station in Indy called WIBC, which was the flagship station for the Speedway Radio Network, the Indianapolis Speedway Radio Network. And one thing led to another. I met the guy who created that network, Sid Collins, and yes. He and I became close friends, and he started grooming me to be a play-by-play sportscaster of motorsports. And when he passed away, the job came to me. It was really that simple. And, you know, I just came to it with passion. I wanted everybody to feel about it the way I felt about it. So that's how I tried to portray it in a way that would say that this is cool and these people are worth every moment of your attention.
Yeah. And, you know, and for those who don't know Sid Collins, he was the person who coined the term the greatest spectacle in racing in reference to the Indianapolis 500, which I think it absolutely is all of that. So racing was the end goal. That was a question that I was going to ask you. So it was something that you wanted to get into broadcasting, but you wanted to get into broadcasting specifically to call motor races.
Right. There was actually a period of time there when I actually thought I was a race driver.
And, really?
I raced in the SCCA in a Formula Ford.
That's right.
In fact, I took my first driver's school at Road America.
Oh, no kidding.
And at the time, I didn't know anything about Road America, despite the fact that I'm a military brat, and my last place that I lived with the family was on the north side of Chicago.
Okay.
So I really should have known about it, but I was more focused on Indy and stuff like that. But I knew I wanted to try to be a race driver, and I ended up going to the SCCA, and you had to take two driver schools. One was here in Indianapolis, and the other was Road America. And Augie Papps was our chief instructor. Just pulling up to Road America and saying, oh, my goodness, look at this place.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And it really, really was an enjoyable time. And I loved going back there. But anyhow, my 7-year career of racing Formula Fords and SCCA netted me, I think, 3 pewter cups.
Oh, nice.
And certainly no cash. And
no.
And I said, you know, this is really not for you. You can drive fast, which I could, but I could not compete strongly against other guys right alongside of me. I mean, I did okay, but
I would imagine, I would imagine
you probably know the same feeling. You know, you're there, you're fast, but you're not quite fast enough.
Right. I would imagine that gives you a lot of perspective on what it took to call a race. You know, actually going through the turns and seeing what the drivers go through.
Yeah, especially since a lot of the drivers out of that era, well, still many of them today, come through the Formula Ford ranks on their way to the pros. And with the Formula Ford of that day, with no aerodynamics, you really had to know how to I call it love the car. And you have to be able to get it in and out of corners smoothly. It didn't have any real power to speak of, so you learn management of power, and it was a great car to learn how to race in.
Yeah, this past weekend actually I went to my first SCCA race, and it was the June Sprints at Road America that we had.
Oh my God, is that the greatest or what?
Oh my gosh! Well, and so a friend of mine, he operates and he manufactures and like soups up Mini Cooper B-Spec. So a B-Spec for listeners is like front wheel drive, like a Ford Fiesta or, you know, and they take these cars and strip them all down and make them little mini rocket ships. And I called our local SCCA guy who does all the testing and everything. And I said, well, I have racing experience. So, you know, do I have to still go to the school? And I didn't hear back because I called him on that Thursday, and that was June Sprints, which is, I mean, hundreds of cars was there.
Yeah.
And then I went to my first event, and I was just like gobsmacked by, you know, the difference in what I do racing in circles on a dirt track to what it takes to do that, even at that low level.
Yeah. Right.
And so
I will tell you. I'll tell you a story since you mentioned June Sprints, which of course everybody wanted to go to.
Oh yeah.
And in the day we have, I guess what we were driving you call Club Ford today.
Sure.
And the our field was the full subscription for Road America, 80 Formula Fords.
Jeez.
And so there is the bridge going up the hill, right?
Yep.
And so the rule in SCCA was green to the front row is green to the field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you qualified like in the 20th row or something, you wouldn't see the green flag when it came out.
Right.
You're coming up the hill.
Yeah.
So we got a guy to get on the bridge, and he had a little orange, bagel orange disc. And as soon as the green flag came out, he's on the bridge, and he starts waving that. And so we can see it. So now we're passing all these guys who don't know about that. that's a kind of a Roger Penske move.
Isn't it? Yeah, no, that's awesome.
We read the rules as closely as we could.
Yeah, that's right. And you followed them. That's right.
Yep.
It's within the rule. It was, I met a guy that was on the road to Indy, and his name is Bobby Eberle. I'm sure he'll listen to this. He's a great guy. And he was on a quest to become the oldest rookie to ever qualify for the Indianapolis 500. And he ultimately didn't do
it.
Yeah, it was really cool. And, you know, he gave me like backstage passes, if you will, to when he was in Pro Mazda. Yeah. So that's like two rungs down from IndyCar. And that was a number of years ago. But to see those cars going full speed up that hill towards the green flag at Road America was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had in my life. I hope people can do that at some point, because it really is remarkable. And then this past weekend, we went to, for the first time, I've been to Road America a number of times, but I've never been to Siepkins. And that is a very famous racing bar, and they have like autographs. I think Paul Newman autographed the wall. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of Mario Andretti, and he autographed that. And so, you know, it's so cool because, you know, I took my boys there, and they got to see the sights and hear the engines, and you know, I hope that they have a love for motorsports instilled in them, because then, you know, they get to go to these events and see the wonder and the awe that is performance race cars doing truly incredible things.
Yep.
Yeah, it is something. And it really was a remarkable experience. And we're going to continue this discussion on the other side with Paul Page. We're going to talk about how the industry of broadcasting works in motorsports. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Timeout!
Oh, right! Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee, on June 7th, presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's Independence Resolution word for word. Resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Veal.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution with host Mark Becker. We'll get back to his conversation he had last year with Paul Page, legendary broadcaster. First, once again, that message from Mark Becker about a comment he made last week on the show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back on the Rational Revolution. You've got Mark Becker, and we have a special episode here continuing with legendary motorsports broadcaster Paul Page is with us. And I want to talk about, I'm going to take you back to when you were in the thick of it. And, you know, one of the things that I think makes you so timeless is from a general broadcasting sense, you had the talent to, I could close my eyes and I could picture what was happening on the television. And I don't know if I've ever experienced that since. Radio broadcasters, you know, MRN, PRN, the guy, those folks, They do. They come close, but it's not Paul Page. And how do you prepare for something like that?
You have to paint the picture, and you have to think about how you're going to do that. And so you end up putting a lot of adjectives in there. You know, this color, this car is not just blue. I mean, it's royal blue, and it's sparkling in the sun, that sort of thing. And the more you do that, and the more you create that theater, the more you become accustomed to narrating in that particular way. And the idea then, that when you are done, that you have painted some sort of a picture that the fan can follow. And if you look at television and the television part of my career, I was always taught to be, and by Sid and others, a storyteller. And we don't see that much of that today. That that's wrong. It's just the way things have gone. But when I was coming up, the real thing with all of us was to tell the story, to have, don't just, well, here's a great example. Here's Al Unser Jr. and Emerson Fittipaldi, and they're racing for the win at the Indy 500.
Yes, yep.
And I decided as a television guy that I told the story. I set everything up, what it meant to those two individuals, how important, how significant this was, how significant it was in the world of motorsports, because Indy is the pinnacle.
Yes.
And then I decided, we've been watching these two guys. We know what the story is. And I just went silent. And every lap or so, it was for about six laps, I would just say, you know, there's 15 miles to go, laps to go.
Yeah.
And then I'd let it breathe. And so when they finally got to turn three on the final laps, and they got together and little Al spun, Emerson went on to win, that picture had been painted. It was there visually, and you let the viewer, just help the viewer enjoy what's there.
And so when those moments happen, you know, is it something where you can prepare for, like, or is this really just off the cuff that you kind of come up with these things?
Yeah, I see your further question, yes. There is. And that is, in my world, immersion. You have to talk to all of these people, and not just the drivers. You talk to team members and mechanics and owners and everything, and you just keep that conversation going. So you become part of that community and part of that flow. And by doing that, and then the real problem that I had was at the beginning, I would take all the publications and I'd read them.
Oh, okay.
And then I'd go to the track, and I would start talking with people. And I'd end up being confused, because talking to the people was real time.
Yes.
And sometimes the publications I was reading were like a week old. And so they were contradictory to one another. So I had to cut back on the publications quite a bit and just do primary research with all those guys. And, of course, being friends with many of them, that paid off a lot, too. And then the other thing about it was being honest with them. I would keep their secrets. If they they would come and tell me, hey, we're trying this at this race. If it works, you can talk about it. If it doesn't, shut up.
That's awesome.
And so, all of those things kind of paid off. And I talk about that, actually, quite a bit in my book. Hello, I'm Paul Page. It's race day in Indianapolis.
Yes.
It's more immersion than anything else. And when you're doing a series, you know, when you're doing one team for baseball and doing all their games, you get into that mode because you're with them all the time.
Yes. And during the broadcast, how did you, we got a minute left in the segment, how did you tune everybody else out to really focus on bringing that message to the country?
Well, the message of the secrets that I might have.
Of the race, of the
across
action.
Across the board. Yeah. That's the point where I sit down and I say, I'm going to treat the audience like they're sitting next to me in the grandstand.
How beautiful.
And they haven't been to a race. Some of them may have been to one or two. So I treat it that way, that I'm sitting with my friends, and I'm telling my friends what's going on.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. And that was, you know, I think that's something that we're going to talk about here in the next segment, you know, because that's something that was so critical and so important of a key that you brought to the broadcast that I don't see in any form of motorsport right now. So we're going to talk about that on the other side. We've got legendary broadcaster Paul Page here in the Rational Revolution. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM. As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. 11 girls have not been seen since their Christian camp was slammed with a wall of water in Kerr County, Texas. The confirmed death toll in that county alone is 59.
Our goal is to rescue those in peril and find those who are lost.
That goal of Kerrville Mayor Joe Herring won't be easy. It's raining again. Up to 10 more inches could fall today in parts of Texas, where the death toll is up to 70. President Trump has declared a major disaster, freeing up federal resources. The Coast Guard is flying planes with thermal imaging, trying to find anybody who might still be alive. The National Weather Service in Raleigh has just issued a flash flood warning for central North Carolina, getting inundated from what was a tropical storm. As Israel attacks today killed 38 in Gaza, Benjamin Netanyahu is on his way to the U.S. to meet with President Trump tomorrow, saying that Israel has never had a better friend in the White House. This is ABC News.
A comeback for the Brewers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, game three of the Brewers and Marlins series today. And back on the mound for Milwaukee is veteran right-hander Brandon Woodruff. It's been nearly 2 years since September of 2023 that he started a major league game, his last game in Miami. Woodruff back after surgery and setbacks in his throwing arm. Today's game, a rubber match, the Brewers losing to the Marlins yesterday, 4-2. Manager Pat Murphy after the loss.
Yeah, we had some opportunities today and didn't do it. Didn't get the big hit at the big time. Put some pressure on him, got the starter out of there. Credit goes to the Marlins. They're scrappy. They play hard. And we didn't do enough. It's hard to win a major league game. You got to stay after it. You got to get big hits. You got to perform with the men in third and one out. We didn't.
Brewers first baseman Reese Hoskins had to leave that game with an injured left thumb, giving him a hard time holding a bat. Murphy says it could be at least a few days before Hoskins returns. The Brewers host the Dodgers tomorrow night. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Big Brother Season 27 is about to drop, but there is an exciting new twist, according to the people who created said twist. Variety says three contestants from previous seasons will drop by every Friday night to analyze the sitch. Other highlights for this coming season will include a mystery hotel theme and a living room with chess guardians, whatever that means. Season 27 of Big Brother drops July 10th on CBS. In other Season 27 news, the creators of South Park are not happy about the delay in their latest season reaching viewers. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are blaming the Paramount merger with Skydance for the long wait between seasons. Season 26 finished 2 years ago. A recent update was that the new season would drop July 9, but that has been pushed back again to July 27. Just guessing, we will see Parker and Stone's frustration with the networks in a South Park episode in the near future. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny skies developing today. Light north winds at highs in the mid-80s. In the overnight, a few clouds around. Light winds, morning lows in the lower 60s. Monday, mostly sunny with highs in the lower 80s. Storm chances Monday night and Tuesday. Right now, it's 82.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll review the holiday weekend. Hope yours has been good. Also, Kristen Lierley, John and Gordy, and Jane Matinere will join us as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll get back to Mark Becker's conversation with legendary broadcaster Paul Page from last year, a best of program this week. But once again, that message from Mark Becker about last week's show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is a fun one. We've got my childhood hero, Paul Page, legendary broadcaster of Open Wheel and all things fast here on the show. And I wanted to talk about one of the things that you were so especially good at, and you kind of touched on it before the break, is I feel that if you're a fan of motorsports, it's a little bit of a niche thing. And so yep. You have to kind of tell people why they should, like you said earlier in the show, put all of your attention to these humans that are doing incredibly remarkable things. And I think you had such a perfect balance between talking to people who tune in religiously every week, but also balancing that with welcoming in new people to the broadcasts and allowing them to learn.
Well, that's nice of you to say, because that was one of the objectives.
Oh, cool.
We knew that we were a niche and that there were a lot of people that didn't know us, but if they did, we thought that we would be able to keep them. And so you had to balance that broadcast with going for the connoisseur and making sure you put enough of that kind of meat into it, the little technical things or the little driver facts that they really love. But you also then had to almost constantly be updating the person that's just stepped into the chair for the first time. And so you really make me feel good that you say that, because that was part of our objective, was we had to figure out how to do both.
It was. And, you know, and I think, like, it's, you know, my son likes to watch NASCAR, and there's so often.
I'm sorry for him.
I know. Well, we're getting into to Open Wheel a little more because, you know, but the broadcasting, you know, every time they talk about, you know, the new one lug nut, which is so funny how that's like this remarkable, oh my God, moment for NASCAR. We went to one lug nut to hold on the wheel, which is what IndyCar and CART have been doing for 30 freaking years. But then they cut to this same graphic that goes for a minute and 45 seconds. That's like, okay, here we go again. You know, where you have someone that was a real professional that can explain that in layman's terms and then move on. Right. Yeah. And so that was something that was, it was so easy to get sucked into the world of CART because it was a circus. It really was.
Yes, it very definitely was.
And
we'd call it that internally.
Oh, did you really?
Uh-huh.
No kidding.
Yep, the circus is starting again. Here we go.
Yeah, right. And I mean, there was the highest of highs and the lowest of the lows. And I remember my favorite driver was the old Red Gloves, Greg Moore. He's a guy from Canada.
Oh, yeah. And what a beautiful human being.
Wasn't he? You know, yes. And I can remember, and the very moment in Fontana where Greg's tire dug in and he hit the wall head on. And Paul, I can remember the inflection of your voice when you watched it and you just said, "Oh my God." I remember that, Paul. I got goosebumps. I can remember that like it was yesterday. And they just celebrated, or not celebrated, they just, you know, remembered. What was it, 20 years since he died?
Yeah.
How, something like, I mean, but I remember that, like it was yesterday. And I know it wasn't typically you that would have to break that news that someone has passed away. You know, it was typically Jerry Punch or a pit reporter or something. But inevitably, they always cut back to you. And it was you, the voice of comfort, the voice of, okay, guys, here's how we're going to get through this. I mean, I cried. When I was a little kid, I cried when I found out that Greg Moore had passed away. And the cameras turned to you. How do you deal with something like the unthinkable?
Well, I had to do it too many times.
Yeah.
If you were lucky, I say that advisedly, you'd have a bad accident, but the individual was not killed at the track.
Yeah.
And then it got delayed and you didn't have to deal with it because it was announced after the race.
Oh, sure.
But when you had things like Greg Moore and Krasnov and Coletta, just
Scott Brayton, yeah,
it just rips your heart out again, yeah. Because they're your friends, they're your buddies, they're your brothers.
Yeah.
And Greg Moore especially, because that morning I was down doing my usual troll through the pits, and he and I were talking, and you know, he had a great future coming. He was going to go to Penske the next year.
Yes.
And Lord knows how many races he would have won.
Oh my God.
But he had wrecked his scooter the night before.
I remember that.
And in doing it, he broke some bones in his hand, and they created a special splint fiberglass thing to hold his hand so he could race. And he was laughing about it and laughing about, you know, the lidocaine that they were putting there is so good. Maybe they ought to put it in my butt so I won't feel how high the gravity G's are on the race car.
Yeah.
And we're just having a great time. And then to see that, and you do this long enough, you know instantly what it was.
Yeah.
And then to have to wait, because mm-hmm. everybody's got to be notified. It's all got to be dealt with. In that particular case, the people running IndyCar got a little off base in that they came up with this idea of they were going to lower the flags and call a yellow light and then make the announcement. This is, you know, it's not what this is. This man has died. He's got a family crying. Well, this is not the time you do those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I was furious.
All right.
And on the other side of the glass next to me was the race control and Wally Dahlenbeck, the chief steward. And we just kept looking at each other like, what are they doing? Why are they doing it this way? And, so finally, we said, you know, they can do whatever they want. And they actually brought the flags down once, and then they put them back up. They couldn't coordinate anything.
Wow.
And so I just said, we know everybody's notified. We're going to tell the audience because they need to know. Because their hearts are in their mouths over that accident, too.
Yeah.
So, but dealing with those, then you reach down and you try to remember the good things and try to give some ease to the pain that I think everybody is feeling.
Right.
When you have those kind of things, just horrible. And, you know, we're unlike any other sport, motorsports. It is not only possible, it is somewhat likely that you will have a serious or a fatal accident at one time or another.
Yeah. And here we're talking with legendary broadcaster Paul Page. And I think, it's no disrespect to the, you know, Scott Braytons of the world. But I think, you know, when you can see, Greg Moore was, what, 24, I think?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And the legacy that he left in his such short time in American open wheel racing, and everybody knows him, and everybody, you know, just remarks about what an incredibly, genuinely wonderful person he was. What a legacy that is, you know. And I can't imagine how many champions he probably gone to Formula One. Oh my God, he was so good.
And there is a little Greg Moore story there.
I'd love it.
When he was just trying to get an IndyCar or a kart ride at that time, one day I'm looking at this kid who is hanging around in front of Roger Penske's operation, his team set up at the track. And he's just standing. He stood there for a couple of hours. Every time I go by, this kid's still standing. And it was Greg Moore.
Really?
And he was looking for an opportunity to talk to Roger Penske. And so I finally said to one of Penske's lieutenants, a guy named Dan Lugendew, I said, Dan, this kid's been standing out here, really wants to talk to Roger. What do you think? He said, oh, we got to get him in. And so they arranged for him to talk to Roger. And, of course, at that time, he didn't go to Roger. He was with Forsythe that year. But Roger liked him, and Roger was going to put him in a car in the next year.
That's crazy. That's so cool.
But he stayed with it. He's standing out there, and he's going to stand there until he gets to talk to Roger. And that was super.
That's awesome. Wow. And how much of that is, you know, exists today about, you know, and I don't know how it was with kart, but in IndyCar, there's a certain number of seats that, like, and I don't want to disrespect any drivers, but it's like they're not the best, because some of them, and it's a decent number, are paid, and they buy their way into the series. And was that like that back then as well?
It was. It wasn't as prevalent. And when I started, the driver got a portion of the purse.
No,
so you'll notice we never announce the purse anymore because we don't really know what it is.
Right.
But usually then 60% went to the driver, and the rest was then allocated to the owner and the team mechanics and you know, whatever else. Now it's not that way at all. You'll never hear what they're paid.
No.
And I actually think that in many ways, today the field is far deeper than it was back then.
Really?
I really believe any time they take a green flag now, that there's a good chance that 15 of them are capable of winning. But in those days, it was number more like 7 or 8. If you're really on top of it, you could probably tell that it was going to be this guy or that guy. And more often than not, you could say it's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But you really had to be there, and you had to have the feeling, and you had to be talking to everybody and see what their attitudes were to be able to do that.
Yeah.
The thing I have with today's drivers that kind of bothers me is they've become corporate guys.
Yes.
You don't see, you know, well, you mentioned Alex Zanardi. It was just a joy to be around.
Oh, my gosh.
Always joking around, having a great time. He loved what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Elio, who is that way.
Yes.
But you know, Tony Kanaan was certainly that way. But we're losing those guys, and we're losing them to guys who have been trained to be, and properly so, they got to develop a personality that a corporate boardroom will like.
Right.
And so no controversy, you know, they just, they just try to, they're very vanilla.
Yeah.
And I wish some of them had more out there to say. I love it. Racing is conflict. So
yes,
it can be conflict off the track too, you know?
Right. One of the things that attracted me to motorsports was the quality of the broadcast. And that's why when I went to Road America the first time, and it was in my adulthood, I took all of those memories that you gave me with me along to the track. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about where IndyCar, where motorsports is today on the other side of the break. We'll see you in a little bit.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7th, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee, on June 7th, presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's Independence Resolution word for word. Resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll get back to Mark Becker's conversation with legendary broadcaster Paul Page from last year, a best of program this week. But once again, that message from Mark Becker about last week's show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right, it's about right versus wrong. And I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is awesome. We got Paul Page, legendary broadcaster, joining me here today. And this is an honor and a thrill. And again, thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to do it. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about where the sport is today. So I bought your book. I bought the book that John Roskowitz had called The Split, which talks about the split between IndyCar and CART, and then kind of comes back. And I started those books. But I want to talk about where IndyCar is today, because it is not the same as CART. CART
was
such a thrill because it had so many different manufacturers. We had Mercedes and Honda and Toyota and Buick and Chevrolet and different cars. You look at what a car was like on an oval, and you had the Hondas with the swept wing that went down that looked like a stealth fighter, and you had the Chevys that had the straight wing, and it looked different. And today you have Chevrolet and Honda. I think Honda wants to get out of it, if I read that article right. And all the cars are the same. And it's like NASCAR with open wheels, you know?
Right.
So, it
very definitely is, excuse me, it very definitely is a spec series now. It's the Formula Ford.
Yes.
The big cars. And, excuse me. In being that hands everything to the driver, but it takes some of the development excitement away.
Yes.
I mean, I really enjoyed it when we had all those different cars. And, you know, there was technology changes, and you could beat somebody with some small change to the way you designed your rear wing, or you put a splitter in
right.
certain places. You can't do any of that stuff.
No, none of it.
And so that hands it to the driver, but it takes away all the good things that the designers, the engineers, and the mechanics are capable of. What did it to them was cost.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Once they became mixed in with all the other sports, and now you're vying for ratings and time, the cost to create one of those cars started to skyrocket.
Hmm.
And the owners decided they needed more of a common car that was really strictly regulated. So now we have the Dallara.
Yep.
You can't do that much to it. My son is an engineer on the Andretti
yes,
team.
That's right.
And he constantly says, you know, geez, I wish we could work on them more, but it's the goal they've been given. But yeah, it takes a lot of the background excitement away.
So what can they do to the car? He's an engineer. Like, is it internal? You know, with like tuning the engines, or is, you know, what kind of things can they do?
None of that.
None of it.
The engine comes in a case from either Chevrolet, which is really Elmore. It's badged as a Chevrolet.
Okay.
Or from Honda, where it is a true Honda.
They're crate motors?
And they bring it in and they send an engineer with it. And you can't modify anything on that engine. You can't touch that engine.
Oh, my gosh.
And then with regard to the chassis, there are some small part replacements, and the sport itself is often calling for little changes, mostly related to safety.
Sure.
But any change that you make or want to make, you've got to get the clearance of IndyCar, and it has to be shared with everybody else. But that does keep overall costs down.
Yeah.
So you could do what Formula One does, which spends an ungodly amount of money.
A Bolt costs $5,000.
yeah. But their races are disappointing.
Yes.
I mean, I enjoy it. I watch them, but they're so single file.
Yes.
And then they got that whole DRS thing.
Yes.
That's a great idea, except if I'm coming up to pass you and I'm using DRS, you can't fight me back. You're just a sitting duck. I'm going, and that's, you know, that doesn't make sense. I
right.
mean, push to pass exists in IndyCar, but at least both of you can use it.
Right. You can fight it.
Yeah. It's more of a driver's series, and in many ways that's good. We see some spectacular runs like we saw last weekend. I mean,
yes,
Paulo is just he's an amazing little guy.
And is he long for IndyCar?
Got Colton Herta, which is.
Is he long for IndyCar, or do you think he'll go to Formula One?
No, I think he'll stay in IndyCar.
Oh, cool.
Most of the guys that come to IndyCar, they end up staying there
good.
Because they've trained
maybe in one of the lesser series of Formula One. You know, they've been Formula Three or Formula Two, and it's an atmosphere that it's not particularly pleasant for them.
Well, Paul Page, this was fun. Thank you so very much for bringing this alive to us here in our audience.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, this was great. I wish you nothing but the best, and it was really an honor to speak with you today.
It was with you as well. You have a good time.
You too, sir. Have a great fourth. Thank you.
Mark's back next week with a brand new show. This is The Rational Revolution, soaring high above lacrosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX Lacrosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. Now a tornado warning adding to the misery in central Texas, where the downpours continue, slowing the search for any survivors of the 4th of July flood devastation. 70 are dead in three counties. 11 girl campers remain missing, along with their counselor. The National Weather Service says staffing cuts did not affect its response. Stuart Gross lives in Kerr County.
We got the normal watches.
But nothing, he says, to alert him to serious danger, not until volunteer firefighters drove down the road with loudspeakers.
They were going around in their trucks on their speakers. It was dark, torrential rain, 4 something in the morning, and that was our warning.
Flash flood warnings now up for central North Carolina for pounding rain from what was Tropical Storm Chantel. Israel's prime minister is en route to Washington to meet with President Trump tomorrow. As ceasefire talks fizzle, Israel says Hamas wants too much. This is ABC News. Folks in Philly.